Hi guys, it's Trev again with his next little tales of his trip to the USA and Canada. I was thinking before I did this that before I got to the USA, my only idea of what the Americas looked like was from watching John Wayne films and Laurel and Hardy. Well, it wasn't quite like that. It's changed a bit, I think, since the Western days. And also finding the culture a lot different, even though it's English speaking, the culture and the manners of the people were a lot different. Anyway, I've got three little tales to tell today, rather funny and some frightening, I suppose. The first one was in November 65, and we had a day recording in the studio, and then we were chilling out in the later afternoon, sitting on sofas, smoking, having a drink. And the lights flickered a little. We thought, what's going on? That's unusual. And before we knew it, we were looking out of the window and we could see all the bright lights of the city of New York, which are quite an awesome sight for anyone, gradually all turning off, flickering and all going down until the whole city, looking out over it from the window on about the fifth floor, everything was black. You couldn't see anything apart from, fortunately, a moon shining. Our American guys in the studio were completely perplexed. What on earth's happening? What's going on? And I think they managed to light some candles, if I remember rightly. Don't forget, this is a long time ago. Perhaps we thought we were stoned out of our mind and imagining it, but no, everything was off. There was no electricity. So they turned the radio on to see if they had got any news, and of course that didn't work because there was no electricity. But one of the guys, I think that was Bob Harvey, one of the two guys, there was Bob Harvey and Bob Gallo who ran the studio. One of them had got a transistor radio, battery-driven, so he turned on his radio to the stations he wanted. And of course there was nothing there because all the radio stations had got no electricity either. But he fiddled through the dials, and as it happened, the only station he could get was the sound of what sounded like an Oriental gentleman rattling along in presumably Chinese or something or other, with sort of strange noises in the background. Well, Bob was a bit of an old lady, I suppose, a bit of an old woman, really. And he started panicking. He says, that sounds like, that's Chinese, he said. That's their bombers coming in. They've put something out. They're bombing as the starting of war. Well, we didn't quite believe that. I think perhaps because a few of us had had a few funny cigarettes too many. But nevertheless, it was quite frightening, and we wondered what on earth was happening, and we couldn't get any information, we couldn't find any radio stations. It was just clear that the city had blacked out. There was a power failure somewhere. And of course, we weren't too far from where we were staying, so eventually we could walk home. And walking home through the streets was a strange, very strange experience, because there were people coming out of manholes in the road from the underground, from the metro system, because they'd of course had all been trapped in trains, and the rescue parties were coming along, getting them out of the coaches and getting them up steps and coming out into the road, out of the ground. That was really, really weird, of course. And of course what we couldn't see either was all over New York there were people trapped in elevators, or if you're English, in the lifts, and they would be stuck there for quite some time. I think I'm right in saying that the power wasn't restored over the city until about 7 o'clock the next morning, something like that. There were one or two enclaves in the city that kept their electricity because for whatever historical reasons they had got their own power supply. But the power outage went right up through New York State, right up into Ontario, where the power was generated near Niagara Falls. That was really a strange and scary episode at the time. But we recovered, weren't affected, and luckily our apartment was only a few stories up, so we could walk up and get to bed and forget about these poor people trapped everywhere. But that was, I think, in the second week in November. Because the next thing after that for the Americans was Thanksgiving Day, which we didn't know much about because we're not Americans, basically. But we got an invite to Bob Gallo's apartment or flat, wherever it was he lived. I can't really remember exactly. And we were invited to dinner there. And his partner, wife, girlfriend, or whatever she was a lovely Mexican lady. And our Thanksgiving dinner was... And had got Mexican overtones, shall I say. But of course there was a lot of food that me, at least in those days, had never had from what was still a fairly poor area of England that I came from. For example, we had a turkey. I've never had turkey because at Christmas times, when we had Christmas dinners, my grandmother kept chickens, so we always had a chicken. So I'd never had a turkey before. We had sweet corn. I'd never seen sweet corn before. That was lovely. That was really a great treat. And also sweet potatoes, of course. I'd never seen a sweet potato. I think I might have heard of them. So it was a really enjoyable dinner, but it was crowned by her Mexican skill in making for the turkey a chocolate sauce, which is a favourite in Mexico, I believe, but is it... We all think of chocolate as a dessert, a sweet, but this was a savoury chocolate, very, very spicy, hot with chilies, which was absolutely gorgeous. So that was my one and only Thanksgiving dinner, thank you very much, and it was really good. Sometime later, from there, and don't forget that this is a long time ago and I've got no notes and it's the chronology of all this may be a little bit out, but we did go up to Canada and I'll talk about that more later. But there was one incident when we was up in Ottawa. We had an interview, or the group was asked to be interviewed by a local radio station. Well, Pete Best couldn't go because he'd flown down to Florida for a radio and TV appearance there. So they told me that it was my turn to go and do some of this publicity and advertising and whatever sort of stuff. So I went along to be interviewed at this local Ottawa radio station. So I walked into the interview room and sat down and like, hello, etc. Except that they were all talking French. Because they sent me to a French radio station because they thought that I could speak French. Well, as it happens, I still had a pretty decent knowledge of French, so I managed to get through that interview. But I think that was one of the greatest fix-up setups that's ever been done in the history of pop music, perhaps. That was a really, really great scam to play on me. Anyway, there's three little episodes for our stay there, and I hope you enjoyed listening to all these ramblings, and the next one will follow along fairly soon. And thanks very much, folks.